Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Glad to have you come there for another D Word on UK Health Radio. This week I'm going to be talking theatre, or more precisely, a one-man show. My guest is Sam Simon, who after receiving a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, decided to turn his experience into a play and a book, Dementia Man, An Existential Journey. Sam will be joining me right after this from Willie Nelson.
Somebody raised me right. I learned how to run before I could walk. I knew how to cuss before I could talk. And I was born for trouble. Somebody raised me right. Everybody said where I come from that I wouldn't live to see 21. I was born for trouble, and somebody must have raised me right. I whipped a man at the county fair. He couldn't stand the way that I combed my hair. I was born for trouble, and somebody must have raised me right.
Willie Nelson and Born for Trouble, an appropriate way to start my chat with Sam Simon, who describes himself, like me, as a self-confessed troublemaker. Sam, it's great to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Lots and lots to talk about. But can I start? Well, the appropriate place to start is to start at the beginning. Tell us about your diagnosis.
Well, I'm diagnosed with early stage Alzheimer's with mild cognitive impairment. That was in 2022. With the Alzheimer's, it was 2018 where mild cognitive impairment. And there's a long story. In fact, I ended up writing a play and now a book about it. But of how, you know, noticing things that were going wrong and trying to figure out what it was, and then finally getting the diagnosis. So I have early stage Alzheimer's, and trying to live the best life you can with it, but the journey of going through it and getting good treatment, at least in the United States, I don't know about the rest of the world, but it is a challenge. But my response has been to how to live the best life possible with the disease. And I'm a counter voice to another narrative, a little bit more loud, perhaps in the European world, but I'm not a fan of accompanied suicide.
Okay. When you did get your diagnosis, were you aware first of all, did you know about dementia? What was your kind of your knowledge about dementia?
Well, not even the word. I did find out, by the way, that I have a genetic risk for Alzheimer's, and I had not seen it in the family. It turned, at least if it was there, it wasn't a diagnosable disease. It came from my grandmother on my father's side of the family, which meant the last name wasn't Simon. I've not been that familiar with that side of the family. I've since learned that side of the family has significant amounts of Alzheimer's disease. So it makes sense. I have only one instance, so I don't think it can come from another. If it were on my a mother's side, I would have had two instances of the APOE4 genetic risk. So now it's not to say that there weren't different people in our larger family. We had an aunt who lived with us, but it was from my mother's side, so I don't think it was Alzheimer's. She lived with us because she wasn't capable of living alone. And she had some sort of cognitive impairment. But she babysat us and took care of us. And I had my own sister who was eventually diagnosed by Mayo Clinic very unhelpfully as low IQ. She passed very young in her late 30s from cancer, so unrelated to, she was just what they called slow. So we didn't see what we called dementia or anybody use that phrase, and yet within the larger family context, there were cognitively different people, but no discussion of it. So I didn't suspect. My discovery of it was because my own behavioral changes, my own life changes, my beginning to get lost. Not realizing I was driving on the right side of the road until cars started coming at me. And then I had a very, and we can talk about later, but a very unique, what I consider unique, phenomena of losing cognitive awareness in the moment. I'd be trying to remember something, I'd be sitting and trying to remember. And then for me, I would exit the present. I would be like floating in space. I can still remember as I describe it, of spinning and floating and trying to find it, and then I'd come back. So it scared me, it worried me. And then we can talk later about how broken the American neurology system is.
Okay, yeah, you did describe it as a challenge. I think it's a challenge the world over for people. But let's go to that just a little bit. I mean, so you're diagnosed, you've looked up there's a possible family link. Next step in terms of support, was there anything there for you?
Yes, my wife of now 59 years, 7 months and 12 days. So it's an odd thing to say and describe. The bigger support was, in fact, family. But we live in a community that we live in a community. We're very active in the community. We're Jewish, so the synagogue, and may sound crazy to people, I don't know, but the first people we're told were our kids. The second were our clergy. And they provide comfort and welcome, and we belong to a very large synagogue, and there's somebody, director of caring, and they have people there. Susan, my wife, though, had worked in a senior living facility that had memory care. She'd been retired for a very long time, but and so her ability to be equipped to engage in the process was significant. And then we had this unique relay situation. In 2000, my wife Susan was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she was given a terminal diagnosis. She was told, well, there is a unique, everybody's story is unique, but she had a double mastectomy. Her first visit to her oncologist, he finds a post-mastectomy lump. The doctors pulled me aside and said, it's going to end badly and maybe soon. I had to get ready for that. Well, back there, that you're seeing the back of the book, I ended up writing about that. It was unlikely, but I ended up. So I ended up for a period of years being with my wife as her care partner as she was going through what we thought would be a life-ending disease. And I even ended up writing a book about that and a play. So we switched. I think that's as far as I'm gonna, it's unusual. Now I have the diagnosis. Alzheimer's is a terminal diagnosis. I'm early stage. And yet, so our relationship and our help for each other in some way is unique. And her ability to do that, and our community, and then of course our children and family. They were fortunate to be. My son lives 5 minutes away with his wife, and our daughter. And he's a lawyer, but our daughter lives. We live in Northern Virginia, D.C., Washington, D.C. area, and in nearby Maryland. Our daughter is a pediatric dentist. We call her a doctor. but she knew sort of in the medical world too. So we've called and helped. So we're really lucky in that the family is present. They're supportive. There's a medical community here that's been good and. In some ways, we're a privileged life in that regard. The folks in our medical practice have known us for a long time that we've gone to. Though the neurology world is badly, badly broken.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role, just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I wrote the Orange Blossom Special back in 49, Manhattan to Miami. She was the finest on the line. I worked in the dining car, America rolled by. A young kid waiting tables, just trying to make a dime. I seen the end of a rainbow, there was no pot of gold. A lesson learned the hard way, one more lie that I'd been told. Been tempted by the devil, I let that evil in. And I have been forgiven by my dearest friend. Sometimes, sometimes, I have seen sometimes. I met a pretty girl from Texas. We settled down in Abilene. Started up a family. Man, those days were lame. They shot JFK and Bobby and Martin Luther King. Heard name for Santa Rita and Mahalia Jackson say, Lord, everyone was broken, our innocence was gone, and we lost our youngest to the war in Vietnam. I still hear his mama crying the day our baby died. Ain't no way he didn't make it over to the other side. Sometimes, sometimes we have seen sometimes. Oh, I am an old man now, my life is almost done. And deep in my heart I do believe we shall overcome. I pray for no more sorrow, a kinder tomorrow. Can we get there? Lived to see the first black president. I was so proud I cried. The first time I felt equal, and Martin's dream was still alive. Held my woman in my arms. It was hard to say goodbye. I kissed her for the last time. She smiled and closed her eyes. Oh, I miss her every morning. Her kind and gentle ways. Life changes without a warning. Can't bring back yesterday. So if that orange blossom special comes rolling down the line, stop and think about me when that old train whistle whines. Sometimes, sometimes, we have seen sometimes. Sometimes, sometimes, we have seen sometimes.
Vince Gill's celebrating 50 years in the business, and sometimes here on UK Health Radio we have over 40 shows covering every aspect of health, available for listen again and download from ukhealthradio.com and the UK Health Radio app. My guest this week is author and playwright Sam Simon.
Okay, we'll park that for a minute, Sam, and come back to it. But most people, when they get a diagnosis, okay, reacting in various ways. But, you know, for the second time, as you've just told me about Susan, your reaction to bad news eventually was to write a play, which I think that's pretty unique, but not only to write a play, but also to be the main actor in that play.
Well, so yes, it is unlikely. And the circumstance, though, everybody's life journey is unique. And so having, well, having written the play, this previous play, performed a one-man play, I also am a bit of a troublemaker. It's a theme of my work. My whole life I've done that. I we can talk about it later, had a career with, some people know who he was, Ralph Nader. I had that reputation and had, so I managed as a one-person performer to engage myself in the larger theatrical movement in the United States. There is a organization called the Association of Performing Arts Professionals. It's the Trade Association of Theaters. They know who I am. To say that, I'm a drop in the ocean of theater, right? And I'm out there with my elbows and, you know, talking. And so when I was diagnosed, I had been performing my other play. In fact, one of the symptoms was during the pandemic, I was performing my other play over Zoom from my home. I've been doing it for almost 9 years, and all of a sudden I was having trouble with lines. And that was one of the, anyway, so I started telling my fellow actors I didn't know how long I'd be doing this. I had this diagnosis, and they were the ones who said, write it down and put it on stage, put it on paper and put it on. So I was encouraged by fellow actors and some professionals in the field. And it wasn't my first thought. I was lucky to have had the experience of having done it once before around something. And so I thought I'd give it a shot. And that's, you know, in retrospect, it's a logical line, but not an obvious one in any way. And so it's a bit different than most, if not unique. I don't know of anyone else on stage with Alzheimer's at the moment. Although Bennett, what's his name? The singer.
Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett would go on stage and sing with his Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And an inspiration, by the way, to just have seen it. So I'm very fortunate. I have to make accommodations. I did memorize my last play. I can't do that now. So I carry the script on the stage. My wife has been given a role. She's my cognitive navigator, CN. And she sits on the front row with the script and follows me. And periodically, I lose my place. She'll say, page 6, line 9, you know, and quietly. The audiences don't know whether that's planned or real, and it's real. I love that I can do it, but I don't take it for granted. Mm. And I don't claim it. It's a form of a blessing and a fortune. Sometimes we don't understand why things happen in our life, and then looking back, you wonder whether it was all meant to be.
Yeah, most definitely. Things out of what you've been saying. I mean, I'm a fellow troublemaker, so I think we're kindred spirits in that respect. And also, yeah, you never know what's going to find out. That's how this show started 7 years ago. That out of an idea, and ping, here we are. But tell me about the title. Now, I know the title, Dementia Man, but dementia, I know, is a word that you don't like.
Right. I get that question all the time. So the title of the play in the book is Dementia Man, An Existential Journey. I think you may know that there's a movement in the United States and I think in other parts of the world to put that word to rest. And I'm part of that. I'm working with the folks here in this country that are working on that. It is a it's an adjective, it's not a diagnosis. There is no disease known as dementia. It is how we refer to people who have cognitive disorders. And the dementia comes from Dr. Alzheimer's, well, from the time Dr. Alzheimer's or Alzheimer discovered that, and how we refer to people's who behave bizarrely. They like crazy people. Of course, one of the lines that I'm playing is, I'm not crazy, I'm not mad, I'm not insane. I'm just significantly cognitively impaired. And you're not the first one who's asked, said, well, if you hate the word so much, how can we call your play Dementia Man? At the moment, I wasn't, it was like a natural thing to me to call it that. And I will change it as at some point to an existential journey, my life with Alzheimer's or my diagnosis with Alzheimer's. So reverse it. My subtitle is An Existential Journey. I'm called An Existential Journey, My Life with Alzheimer's, or A Story of My Life, something like that. We could change that. Very much online with, in this country, there is a precedent for changing words. The word retarded was the typical word used to describe people with usually autism and or other younger cognitive disabilities. And Congress passed a bill that said the federal government in the United States could not use that phrase, and they don't use it any longer. And I forget there's a different word that's used. There's a movement to get a bill in at the United States Congress saying that the federal government cannot use that word, dementia, in its diagnosis. In fact, the US medical world, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do, or your listeners, we have coding in DSM-5, which is the coding for neurology, had it was changed in 2013. They don't use dementia in the medical world at all. It's called neurocognitive disorder, major or minor. Now that rolls right off your tongue, right? But I think it's enough to say cognitive disorder. I have a cognitive disorder. That's what I hope the language becomes, and even in everyday reference. My dad had a cognitive disease, or that's what we, and they're different kinds. There is no disease called dementia. It's just a state of perceived mental condition. But there's frontal lobe, they call it dementia, but a frontal lobe brain disorder. There's various kinds of brain disorders. But the word dementia is sort of the phrase of what it looks like, which, and you may notice, well, we're on the radio, but you would see, I'll describe it, there is a picture on my wall behind me. It's a very large picture of a man. It's painted, it's drawn in chalk. So this is a photograph of it, of a man, and with a green background, a deep green coat on, and with his left hand up against his head, his eyes closed. And it was drawn, hand-drawn, by a man who had seen my show. Now, he saw my show in the summer of 2023, July. I got an email from his then-widow in November, first week of November. That's like 3 months later. He said he had just passed away, and he had drawn that as a self-image of memory loss. And she donated it to me, the copyright, because the show impacted him. So yeah, we want to get rid of that word as a phrase it's a terrible word, and it is disparaging.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I think firstly, you know, the painting is very striking. I can certainly affirm that. And, you know, words are important. And just because we've used words for, you know, a long, long time doesn't make them the right words. And I think in terms of dementia, there has been an incredible amount of confusion. Most people, when I started doing this show, the question I get asked, you know, you get asked, why did you name your show Dementia Man? I get asked, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? And you then have to start to explain. And I had a cancer diagnosis 4 years ago, and, you know, fingers crossed, everything is fine. But first thing anybody asked me when I said, oh, I've been diagnosed with cancer, they said, what type? And then I explained, you know, the type of cancer. But nobody does that. And dementia doesn't really allow you to do that, does it?
And it's not right. And it's literally an adjective associated with a crazy, insane-looking individual. You know, the challenge a bit is, you know, if you take the, you know, in the medical world, there is cancer, and there's a very specific, even though that word itself doesn't give you very much unique information for any one individual. By the way, I have cancer, in fact. What kind? Well, I have prostate cancer. Okay. And you can say, so the word dementia is doesn't tell you anything, just other than you behave differently, and maybe significantly so. It's not a cause. It's not even within the realm of the same type. Different types of, you know, some are blood disorder kind of, you know, in the brain. Others are caused from stroke. And, you know, I have a cognitive disorder. Oh, what's, do you know the cause? It's like, I have cancer. Well, what do you know the time? But it's the word dementia lets you just never even get there.
Yeah, you know, spot on. I think you're absolutely right with that. And I guess that's just one of the myths that, you know, when I first started with this subject, I don't think I know a subject with so many myths around there of things that people believe that aren't actually the case. And I think your play is so important in, you know, shining a light on all those myths.
Well, there is the... It's not only a myth, there is also, I wonder why, I don't I'm not aware of any other medical, and you can enlighten me if I'm wrong. I'm not aware of other diagnosis where there is a movement in this country and in the world, perhaps, that if you're diagnosed with dementia, life with the disease is not worth living. So there is a movement in the world, but the United States right now too. But well, in Switzerland, you have accompanied suicide. I assume, I don't know about in Britain, but you can, if you can give informed consent, you can be, and you can afford the flight or the price, usually around $10,000 to $20,000. And you can get there with, you can go into a hotel room and kill yourself, drink a cup of poison, accompanied suicide. And it was funny because I was not familiar at all. And I'm, shortly after my diagnosis, I'm on the elliptical machine at our club, listening to a TV, a radio show, a podcast, and it's an interview with a new author. And I don't like giving out the name of the book because I don't want anybody to go get it. But this person had written a book about how, it's a female, her husband had been diagnosed with early stage Alzheimer's, which was my just diagnosis. So now I'm listening. And how hard it was for them to get informed consent and get to Switzerland. So he, in fact, did kill himself. And she quotes him, her husband, as saying, "I don't want to die, but I don't want to keep becoming a lesser and lesser person. And I will never be a lesser person. I may be different, but I won't be lesser." And that, I mean, it's complicated in a way. But if anything, I want to be a voice that says life with this disease can be worth living. Look what I'm doing in my early stages. And look what I have to offer. There may be something unique about me. And all I want, if it can move the needle by a nanosecond of finding the disease cure earlier, I have a gift. We all have a gift with our lives, whatever we go through. And of course, I'm doing this with my hands so your listeners don't see it, but there is the bell curve of any disease. And in the bell curve of Alzheimer's or other, so I want to be the outlier. I'm going for the outlier, but if I'm not, I'm not. Maybe there'll be something unique about me. Again, any of us. And just the autopsy part of it will help find and move the cure or a way to, so we have gifts that we have to offer in science, and I want to be a voice for that and living in as best we can for as long as we can. And even in the later stages, there is a dilemma that I do not have a good answer for. So I'll be honest about that. And that dilemma, at least in the United States, is the cost of treatment and the cost of care. And there are people who can go bankrupt over it. And there's somebody I knew who read his obituary who went to Switzerland, and he's quoted saying, "I don't want to keep becoming an unbearable burden to my family." And I think that's a dollar sign issue. And I doesn't change my mind. I think we need to fix that issue. That's what we need to fix. Not making legal the ability to just go kill yourself because you can't afford, or you perceive you can't afford. A lot of it's complicated, right? Mm. Yeah, I've got all this from my family and I worked my entire life and we have savings and things. And now it's all going to go to take care of me. And I can get the desire to want to exit the stage It may be early, but I don't believe in it. And I'd rather have you give us your gift of that little bit of not new knowledge from you that you may have to offer. So that's my story.
I think it's a great story, and I think it's very powerful and very important that, you know, your voice is heard. We've running out of time a little bit, but I know I did say I'd park the bit about the, you know, the system not working. And just one area of that system, do you feel that we are pushed down the medical route when you have a condition like dementia, and that doesn't take account of all the social interactions that can be so important and as important as drug treatments?
There is... I want to say a yes, and I would love to have the drug and medicine treatments available to everyone. And just today when we're recording in the Washington Post is an article, but I think it's a European study somewhere, about just how important social interactions are for brain and cognitive health. And keeping ourselves engaged the best we can, even as we go through this. There is evidence, now, mine's disease-oriented. I'm a genetic risk, it's a disease. And even if I'm, and I've been out there and I've been visible and I've done, you know, I've had a career, and then after I got out of one career, I started doing acting, and then I start, so I'm active normally in any way. But keeping ourselves active. And one of the complications, and this is great to actually put this together. Thank you for bringing it this way. One of the temptations with this kind of diagnosis is to curl up and become inactive and stay home and to disappear, so to speak. That just accelerates. The evidence is that engagement, active engagement with, whether it's reading, crossword puzzles, visiting people, talking, going to church or synagogue, going to being in the club, being in Rotary, whatever, or just going for walks with people, can have a meaningful impact on staying, slowing down cognitive decline. Now, in non-disease orientation, it appears, that's what this is saying, exclusive of disease, active engagement in life it does extend brain health and awareness beyond the normal. It's almost a secret to good living, where living is being that kind of active and out there. So yes, and my neurologist just Monday of this week, as we saw him, again, said he thinks my engagement, my acting has a meaningful impact on my doing well with the disease. So maybe even that, with the diagnosis, staying active, finding purpose, doing things that are important to you and feel good, exercise, of course, will help you stay healthy and slow the progress of the diseases.
Well, I think that's a very good place to leave it. And I think also, you know, it's not only beneficial to you, you're being beneficial to everybody else with what you're doing, using your voice, using the arts, and demonstrating that after you do get a diagnosis, there's plenty of purpose left and plenty of things you can achieve. A couple of weeks ago, I had a guy called Michael Booth, who's written a murder mystery novel with young onset dementia. I've now got you with Alzheimer's, who's written a play and starred in it. And I think you're both shining examples of what you can achieve. All I can say is just keep on doing what you're doing, Sam. And thanks so much for being my guest.
Well, thank you. If I can say, if they go on dementiaman.com, they can get more information. I do try a blog myself, or video blog every week. With guests and try to keep the conversation going. One quick thing, 2026, is a very significant moment in history in this area. It is the first year a baby boomer turns 80. I just asked my friend AI, and there's a name, Carol Troutman from Washington State, who may have been among the first baby boomers born in 1946, who's turned 80. This is a tsunami. This baby boomer generation is now turning 80. And so it is so important to what you're doing by having us and talking about it and getting the word out there and imagining a healthy, meaningful life. And boy, does this medical world need to catch up with us, because it's coming along.
Thanks so much to Sam for sharing his unique story. You can read more about it and where to get the book Dementia Man, An Existential Journey, at dementiaman.com. And I wish him and Susan all the best for the future. That's all for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be talking about true wealth with fellow UK Health Radio presenter Danielle Sachs. So until then, thanks for your company and take care now.